Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. And now it's time to go
back to the grill again, the grill again, back to the grill again.
Yes, it's that time of year to go back to the grill. And today, along with the spices and barbecue sauce, we're going to add a generous helping of science.
I've been cooking at home and as a student at MIT forever. But as a scientist, I'm always looking at recipes from a scientist's point of view. And every once in a while, you wonder, what the hell are they talking about in this recipe? It makes no sense.
So this is Greg Blonder. He's a professor of mechanical engineering at Boston University. And it's fair to say he's a bit of a science geek. He's also an experienced backyard grilling enthusiast and co-author of the new book, Meathead, The Science of Great Barbecue and Grilling. It's a collaboration with Meathead Goldwyn, known for his cooking website, AmazingRibs.com. Blonder uses science to help cook a better steak, more delicious fish, and juicier chicken and pork, and to debunk a bunch of myths about grilling. To illustrate and taste some of the science behind the sizzle, Greg invited us to his backyard grill in Brookline earlier this week, where he busted one of the biggest grilling myths of all, beer can chicken.
People are adamant this works, even though the science proves it doesn't. The thought is you open a beer can, you drink half of it, you stick it up the butt, and the heat of the grill will cause the beer to evaporate, boil, and that will keep the meat steamed, and you'll add some beer flavor.
Permeate the meat with a sort of nice beery flavor. Whatever.
And sometimes people throw herbs and spices in there as well.
Yeah.
And you can smell them. Yeah. The beer can does hold the chicken vertically, and vertical chicken roasting is brilliant. But it's the idiot cousin of vertical chicken roasting. First of all, the beer can takes a long time to heat up. And I have a thermometer over here on the side.
All right, so let's take a look at this chicken.
And so in this chicken, which you can see is roasting very nicely.
Vertically, okay.
Vertically is great because right.
And just to be clear, it is sitting on a beer can.
It's sitting on a beer can, which is half full, a 16-ounce beer can, browning nicely. The beer can acts like a tripod, so it's and the two legs, so it's standing up. If I look at the temperature inside the breast meat right now, and this is after an hour, 15 minutes, it's at 141 degrees. The temperature in the beer can is at 140 degrees. Nowhere near boiling. Nothing's happening. Plus, the metal can is preventing the moisture from getting into the chicken, even if it did.
I see. So when you say nowhere near boiling, in other words, that sort of disputes the common wisdom that it's steaming and going into the meat and flavoring
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
I see.
The other problem is it's covered with ink. So you now have ink sitting on a hot grill, infusing the meat with ink flavors, not with beer flavors.
Oh, my God. But what I'm intrigued by is it's the idea of sitting the chicken up. What's the advantage of cooking a chicken sitting up?
The reason you want to cook a chicken sitting up is to make sure that the skin on the top and the bottom of the chicken brown equally. When it's sitting down, it's either colder on the bottom or hotter, but it'll cook unevenly.
I see.
And the other reason is it the legs on the chicken splay out, and they're dark meat. And the dark meat takes longer to cook than white meat. And so it cooks the dark meat faster than the white meat, so they both finish at about the same time.
Now, you're going to show us something about cooking chicken breasts?
So we're going to cook chicken breasts three different ways. There is a question about what's the safe temperature to consume chicken, because sometimes the safe temperature for food is not the tastiest temperature for food. The USDA is very conservative. They tend to talk about the highest temperature, and so they tend to encourage you to overcook your meat.
I see.
At 170, a white meat chicken breast is tough and rubbery. Chicken ought to be cooked about 150 to 155. And so we're going to compare chicken cooked at three temperatures, and also to a fourth breast, which was pre-cooked sous vide. What we did in this case is we put the chicken breast in a plastic bag in a bath of water at 135 degrees and cooked it for an hour. That tenderizes the meat, and it means I only have to sear the surface to finish it. So I'm not going to overcook the inside while I'm cooking the outside.
All right, good.
Okay, so this is the very hot side of the grill.
Mm-hmm. So while we're waiting a few minutes for these to cook, Greg, I'd like to ask you about your collaboration with Meathead Goldwyn. His reputation is a cook, right? Pure cook. You sort of brought the science to this collaboration. How did this come about?
About 8 years ago, I was cooking a brisket in the backyard and monitoring the temperature, which is what I do. And it started to rise over 4 or 5 hours. And when it reached 150 degrees, it stopped rising. And it sat at 150 degrees for 3 hours. And then it finally broke through and made it up to 200 and the brisket finished. And so I had this graph and I said, well, that's kind of curious. The answer's on the internet. So I went out to the internet. The answer was not on the internet, but I learned it was called the stall, where the meat's temperature stalls rising in temperature. So I went to Amazing Ribs, which was a smaller site at the time. He had an article about the stall, said it's a mystery, and he had no graph. So I said, hey, here's a graph. You might want to use this as an illustration. And he wrote back, very excited, saying, do you know why this is true? And I said, yeah, I do. And he says, well, nobody else knows why this is true. Could you write an article and explain it? So
why is it true?
So the reason why it stalls at 150 degrees is evaporative cooling. The same reason why after a race you might put a wet towel on your forehead and it cools your head. The meat is sweating moisture. And it sweats more and more as it gets hotter. And at some point, the sweating rate matches the heating rate and it doesn't get any hotter.
I see. Very interesting.
And then once we did that article together, Meathead would say, hey, I got this question from someone. Do you know why? And I'd say, sometimes I knew the answer because it was simple physics, like this was a simple physic. And sometimes I didn't know the answer, and I had to go do an original experiment to discover what it is.
Interesting.
So let's see how these are doing. They have a little bit of a grill mark on here.
Yeah.
You want to flip your meat depending on how hot your grill is, every 1 to 2 minutes. Flipping it cooks more uniformly from top to bottom, and also it cooks faster.
Oh, it cooks faster. Now, explain the science behind that. Because I would think that moving it around and exposing it to air would slow it down.
No, it actually cooks it faster, and the reason is the speed at which heat moves through any object is proportional to the difference in temperature. And when you take the cold side and put it back on the hot, there's a big temperature difference, and the heat rushes in. On the hot side, it's already near the temperature of the grill, so the heat is still entering, but more slowly.
Ah,
so by flipping it, you actually speed it up.
I see. Talk about some of the other big myths that most of us are holding on to in our backyard grilling universe.
One of the myths is that you can tell when meat is done by how stiff it is, how far it pushes back. And a common myth is that you can feel the flesh between your thumb and your forefinger.
Yep.
And as you close that, it goes between rare, medium rare, and well done. Well, first of all, I can guarantee you a ballerina and a sumo wrestler have different flesh between their fingers. But but more importantly, while it is true meat becomes more rigid, turgid, as it heats up and cooks, the exact temperature where it becomes stiff depends upon the cut of meat, and also depends upon how the meat was slaughtered. So depending on whether the animal was scared or not before it's slaughtered actually can shift the temperature by 5 or 10 degrees just based on pressing it alone.
So it always comes back to use a thermometer.
Use a thermometer.
When we talk about grilling, it's like we can't not talk about gas versus charcoal or real wood.
So when propane is combusted, it leaves no flavor, just water and carbon dioxide. So there are no smoking flavors that arise from gas grills. The only flavor you get is if the fat from the meat hits the flame, it will create a grill smoky flavor. Not a wood smoke, but a grill smoky flavor. And that's polymerized fats, and they're wonderful. But you don't look to a gas grill to add a lot of flavor from the cooking. So it's perfect when you don't have a lot of time, when you want to cook vegetables, seafood, it's wonderful. So the advantage of charcoal is if you want to sear a steak, you want to go with charcoal because it's likely to be much hotter than any gas grill you're going to buy at home.
These now look very good. They're brown. They've got some nice grill marks on them.
Okay, so we can slice them up and you can try it. Let's just let it.
So we've got now one at 150, 160, 170, and the sous vide.
Let's start with the 150.
Now, right away, lots of juice.
Yeah.
Coming right out of it as you cut it. Mmm. Very good. It's juicy, salty.
Okay, this is the 160. Take this piece here. This will be, you know, close.
Yep.
To the 150. Either one would be in the zone for most people at home.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Now we're up to 170.
We're up to 170.
And you can see it. It's drier, right? Just by
right.
looking at
There's still a little juice in it. And it's a little tougher when I was cutting it.
Right. No, there's quite a difference.
Yeah.
So just to be clear, when I said there's a big difference, that last one I had, which is cooked at 170, a good deal drier, chewier.
Okay, so try this.
Okay. Now the sous vide, you've even got a little pinkness in there. Wow. Super tender.
Yeah, it's super tender, isn't it? It's worth the extra trouble of preparing ahead of time, spending the hour cooking it.
So it's got the grill taste on the outside, but it's juicy and very, very tender on the inside. Well, Greg Blonder, this has been fascinating. Thank you for talking so eloquently and in such an informed way about the science of grilling.
Any excuse to grill at 10:30 in the morning is a good day.
That's Greg Blonder, who talked to us earlier this week. Yes, at 10:30 in the morning, we were grilling under the hot, hot sun. He's a professor of mechanical engineering at Boston University and co-author, along with Meathead Goldwyn, of Meathead, The Science of Great Barbecue and Grilling. You can see pictures of his grilled chicken, recipes, and more grilling science at RadioBoston.org. Well, that's it for today and for this week. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. Our show is produced by Emma Jean Weinstein, Kathleen McNerney, Allison Bruzek, Jamie Bologna. We had help today from Adam Asher and Catherine Doherty. Tim Skog is our technical director. Our executive producer is Hitesh Hathi. I'm Anthony Brooks. Have a great weekend. Join us again Monday for more Radio Boston.